Welcome to The Talk. I'm Dave Keenest.
Before the ayahuasca, before the clear blue skies, and before the great awakening, there were demons disguised as angels.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another edition of The Talk. I'm Dave Keenest, and we've got always having fascinating talks with fascinating people. And I ran into the person I'm going to interview at the San Diego startup community, a San Diego startup community event in which he spoke prior to me speaking. And it was really interesting to hear his story, because I believe he was inspired by some work he had done with spirit medicine, specifically ayahuasca. And if you go back in the queue, back several episodes, 6 or 7 or 8, maybe 10 episodes back, you can hear me sharing in my experiences and where that work with that medicine led me and my journey. So that's really what grabbed my attention. But then there's also a very brilliant and successful entrepreneur as well, who's really emerging in the San Diego community as a not only a, you know, just a like almost like a model for success, but also a real visionary. So it's really an honor to have him on the show today, Adam Heiner, with, I should know the company here, Boochcraft. I apologize. He's in the kombucha business and making hard kombucha for the people to love. So thanks so much for being here today, man. How are you?
Yeah, doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Did you get any waves in the swell?
Yeah, I was just out yesterday nice. Evening. Yeah.
Yeah, surfed up in Carlsbad. It was fun. Nice. First question I ask everyone is, what fascinates you about yourself? So what fascinates you about you?
Man, that's a good question. I'd say just first thing that comes to mind is that I feel like I've lived like 1,000 different lives. And I think it's probably because of the entrepreneurial kind of spirit and, you know, starting a company, taking it as far as I feel like I can or want to take it, and then something else comes along, and then, you know, moving into a different path. And yeah, it seems like different little worlds that I've lived.
Cool, man. And I like what you said. It's interesting. People refer to or allude to the entrepreneurial spirit a lot. And I actually believe entrepreneurialism, if that's a word, it's a spiritual pursuit. I often refer to like the journey I've been on as a spiritual plight. And I often refer to the spiritual plight of the entrepreneur, because I think that there's something to be gained about the nature of the human experience in creating something that you're inspired to create. I was wondering if you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, everything that I've done as an entrepreneur in my own businesses has always been from inspiration, from my personal values. I don't know any other way. I mean, obviously the goal has always been to make money, but that's never been the reason why I started anything or the reason why I'm in business. So yeah, it's always just been something that I wanted in my life or that I wanted to pursue or felt like I wanted to share with people more so than, you know, for the purpose of making money. Although of course, you know, to be successful, there needs to be profit as well.
Yeah. What's your relationship to money like?
I live pretty simply. I don't spend a lot of money. I don't go shopping a lot. I've always been able to save money pretty easily. I kind of live the life of like, I get what I want, you know, like if I want something, I just buy it, but I don't typically want a lot of material things, but I normally pay for experiences, eating good food. I shop at, you know, the co-op and buy organic groceries. If I want to go on a surf trip, I go on a surf trip, but I don't spend a lot of money on things that I'm going to throw away a year from now.
Right. Aside from surfing and eating, what types of experiences are you here to have?
I like to have experiences connecting with people. I enjoy, you know, sitting around at a gathering or party or a retreat or anything and just really kind of getting real with people and having, whether it be funny, goofy experience or a really serious, intense experience or emotional experience, and just building, I think all of those different types of experiences build deeper connections with people. And I really enjoy getting to know people better.
Yeah. And I think that, I think I walked in on your talk and you were sharing about the experience that you had in ceremony. And that there was this, there was just a sense of community that you had alluded to or referred to, that was kind of, I don't want to go so far as to say unlike anything that you'd ever experienced, unless it was, but could you speak to the relationship between what you experienced in ceremony, with spirit medicine and then the birth of your company, if there is any?
Well, I think that the medicine is a fast track to get somewhere in a really like quick period of time with a group of people and with yourself, you know, to really go deep really quickly. You know, starting a company, it's a long journey that's years and years, potentially even more. But in the onset of the company, you know, there was a sense, like a feeling with my partners and I, Todd and Andrew, my brother-in-law, Andrew, and my buddy, Todd, that we all three started the company. There was a feeling, like a sense, almost palatable feeling that like, wow, this is going to be really big. And I think that I experienced that, like a similar feeling in medicine ceremony of like, wow, this is really powerful. You know, it's just like, can't really put words on it, but you can feel it.
Yeah. And it's, you know, based on my experience with medicine work, you know, I journeyed several times, with ayahuasca in 2010, between 2010 and 2012. And, you know, you have those, you know, mind blowing spiritual types of experiences. But in my opinion, the real spiritual work begins when you put the medicine down and apply the lessons that you're receiving from your visions or your experiences into your real life. And so like one of my catchphrases is inspiration plus integrity equals infinity. And we get inspired, you know, we can get inspired 100 times a day to go do something. I mean, inspiration is in spirit, right? So it's kind of like God is telling you to go do something, but without the integrity, the intentions kind of drift away. And so I'm just kind of curious about what your relationship to your own personal integrity is like your relationship to doing the things that you say that you're going to do and how you went from applying, how you integrated some of these experiences you were having into something that's very tangible.
Well, I start by saying that I think everyone drifts away from the things they say they're going to do, me included.
Right. Right.
You know, I probably have journals full of stuff and inspiration that never came to fruition. But when I do go down a path, you know, when I get inspired enough to go down a path, whether that be surfing or doing acro yoga or starting a business, I commit wholeheartedly and I don't look back. I really go all in. And I think that that's the difference is like, we can be inspired a ton of times and not act on everything because we don't have the time in the day to act on every inspiration we have. But I really think that to choose wisely and then to really go in, you know, and go for it, because if you just tap into a little, like you just go thin into a bunch of different stuff and you're like, oh, I tried that. You never really get the full experience. And I think the spiritual experience is when you go deep into something.
Right. Yeah. I've always said, you know, people tell me they want to try surfing. I'm like, well, if you want to try surf, like you have to give your soul to the ocean. That's the only way. You know what I mean? It's like, there's no halfway. Like once you're to a certain level, you can pick up the board and go when you feel like it and take breaks. But there's just this level of commitment. And then there's also a corresponding freedom that exists inside of that commitment.
Yeah.
Like once you've committed to a path, it's almost like the universe will afford you certain graces having gone all in.
Yeah. I mean, my first 6 months of surfing was hell. I didn't enjoy a lot of that time, but I mean, I enjoyed a lot of it, but I didn't enjoy a lot of it. So when people tell me they want to learn surfing today, I'm like, well, you can start to learn surfing today, but
Well, I know. People ask me if they like, can I teach them to surf? And I'm like, I mean, I can point you in a couple of directions, but the ocean is ultimately going to be the ultimate teacher. Like, that's where you're really going to learn from.
Yeah.
And once in a while, a kid grabs a board and they just decide that there's nothing that's going to stop them from quitting. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm still learning how to surf.
Oh, every day, man. Every single day. I was humbled today. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, cool, man. So what's the word success mean to you?
It's hard to say. Success to me is leaving people on the planet better than you found it, probably in the long run. You know, it's like when you're done with these interactions with these people, what are they going to think about you? And how are they going to think positively on the interaction or negatively? You know, how's the earth going to be after your business is done with it? You know, are you extracting a ton of resources and not adding anything back, you know, to the planet? Or are you actually kind of having a more of a full circle mentality and giving back as much as you're taking?
Yeah. And you had mentioned to speak to impact a little bit. You mentioned that you're using this year, your company is going to use 800,000 pounds of sugar.
Yeah.
And so how are you sorting through, you know, the various interlocking decisions that are involved in that?
Well, you know, sugar is a core ingredient in our process. So there's no way around that. You know, we're using sugar. That's how we ferment the kombucha. So then the choices become like, where do we get our sugar from? And then what can we do to positively impact the land and the people where the sugar is coming from? And so we're on that question right now. What can we do to positively impact the land and the people where the sugar is coming from? We could have chosen to buy a different sugar that was much more expensive that potentially already is, you know, coming from grown regeneratively and the people are doing great. And not to say that ours isn't, you know, ours is being grown organically. So we're buying certified organic sugar and the sugar we're buying is also certified fair trade. So it's, you know, it's starting from a good place, but when you're buying 800,000 pounds of sugar from one place, you know, you start to wonder, we haven't been there. So it's like, what's really going on there, you know, beyond just the cert, you know, the organic cert and the fact that that sugar is certified fair trade. What else, you know, what else is happening?
What kind of an impact would you like to leave on those communities?
I mean, on the land, it would be great if it was being grown, you know, everything's being grown regeneratively and that the soil is actually being built up and we're not degrading the soil. You know, I think that's the most important thing in agriculture right now is building soil and sequestering carbon because of that, as well as, you know, the overall nutrition of the plants and the people that are working on it. And then just that the people are, you know, have a good life. You know, I don't want to tell someone what a good life is. You know, I don't think that the Western idea of a good life is a good life. I don't want them to have a house with an electric, you know, then computers. It's like, I think just making sure that they're living what they would consider to be a good life and enjoying their work.
So, if you were to take 800,000 pounds of sugar and put it in a pile, how big would the pile be?
It's a good question. Well, we get a pallet of sugar, I think is 2,500 pounds of sugar. So that's like 10 times 3. It's like 30, 40 pallets of sugar.
Right.
It's about that size.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Just curious. Cool, man. And then, so kombucha has been like, has it just been a passion of yours? Is this just something that you like started in your garage and just kind of allowed yourself to be led by the universe to where you are now? Or how did this all look? How has this all looked rather?
Yeah, it's kind of a long tail story. I started brewing kombucha. My sister and I were brewing it at home when we were living in PB. And then the whole kombucha shortage happened where all the kombucha got pulled off the shelves and we were like, yes, we're brewing our own. We're not being impacted by the kombucha shortage because, you know, they found alcohol in kombucha back in 2013 or whenever.
And that created a problem?
2011. Yeah, they found someone was walking down the aisle of a grocery store, saw a kombucha bottle fizzing. I think this was in Massachusetts or something. and the person was an FDA or someone inspector. They were just grocery shopping. And they randomly saw a kombucha bottle fizzing and they said, well, that's weird. Wonder what's happening there. Like, that's obviously fermenting, right?
Right.
So they grabbed it and they took it and tested it, and they found that it had 2.5 or 3% kombucha. It was probably a bottle of GTs. And then they alerted the, you know, the TTB, the alcohol and the FDA. And so every bottle of kombucha in the whole country got pulled off the shelves because they didn't know how much alcohol was in all of them. And they were all tested, and some of them, you know, went through rigorous, you know, reformulation processes and everything, and they had to be relabeled, and it was all a process. So that was when I was just home brewing kombucha, and that was actually probably back in like 2008 or 2007. And then eventually I started a restaurant. I was in the food business. I had a catering company. I opened up a restaurant and we started serving my homebrew kombucha on tap at the restaurant. And I was just making 5-gallon batches. This is still low alcohol kombucha.
It wasn't hard kombucha. It was just
it wasn't hard kombucha. Just health, regular, you know, daily drinking kind of healthy kombucha.
Right.
And people were flocking in from all over San Diego County to buy growlers of kombucha. I was amazed at how much kombucha we sold. And so I had a spark. There was something there. Like, wow, this beverage, there's something about this beverage that people are flocking to. People that had never tasted it before would taste it because it was on tap there and they love it. And they come in and just become regular drinkers. So I was like, man, there's a market for this product beyond what's, you know, happening just generally in the stores. A lot of people don't know about it. And then I sold the restaurant a couple of years later. And fast forward another year or two, and I'm sitting with my buddy Todd, kicking ideas around. And he says, hey, I want to grow vegetables in my backyard and sell them. And I said, no, we should. I was like, that's a horrible idea. And he's like, what should we do then? And I'm like, well, we should start a kombucha brewery. And right when I said that, his eyes lit up. And the next day, I instantly called my brother-in-law, Andrew, and said, Andrew, we're starting a kombucha brewery. We need you. Andrew had been homebrewing beer, cider, mead, distilling his beers into moonshine in his garage. And I had been there to see that. He was married to my sister and had been, you know, helping him a little bit in the process of some of that stuff, brewed beer with him a couple times. And so we got him involved, and he had the idea to kick up the alcohol to a higher percentage. And we were just hit the ground running. Like, the moment the three of us sat down in a room and started talking, it was like, you know, you could feel it. It was that feeling that I talked about it.
Well, describe that feeling. What do you think that feeling was telling you?
I think it's like a gut feeling that's saying like, yep, this is right. This everything, you know, it's everything in your, it's all the little cues that the non-noticeable cues that you've had in your life.
Yep.
And all the cells in your body reacting to saying like, yeah, this is right. This feels right. And I think there's something else. Big Magic, Elizabeth Gilbert. Have you ever read Big Magic?
Yeah. You're referring to the idea part that she speaks of, or no?
Yeah. The idea that wants to get manifested.
Exactly. You know, like, right.
After we started this company, people kept coming up to us and saying, man, you stole my idea. I wanted to start a hard kombucha company.
Yeah.
And then they're like, but you guys are doing such a good job. Like, I'm not going to bother anymore. And I'm like, okay, cool. But yeah, I think there was an idea that wanted to be manifested. Like, people were taking their kombucha and mixing in tequila or vodka and, you know, making mixed drinks with it a lot. You know, it wasn't like we were the first ones that thought to put alcohol in kombucha. We were just the first ones to kind of do it in a bigger, kind of more meaningful way. So I think that the thing just wanted to be manifested.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't had a drink in 12 years as of 1 week ago, but, What's the kombucha buzz like?
Well, it's definitely a lighter, little higher vibe, or, you know, more up feeling.
Right.
Typically alcohol is a downer and it kind of makes you tired. Yeah. Especially for me, like, beer and wine really do make me tired. And yeah, the kombucha buzz, there is a little bit of caffeine in there. You know, it's not as much as we say, like, a quarter cup of black tea or something, because we're not making a full-blown black tea, but we are brewing tea as the base. And it's a little lighter and it's just refreshing and kind of has this uplifting feeling to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I can't even do kombucha, man. Like one, even the regular, just a regular plain kombucha, I can sense the alcohol in it, but yeah. And I can feel it throwing me off. But I could definitely see, like, I don't know. I could see why people would really, really gravitate. And there's got to be a difference between like having the brewing of it and the alcohol. You know, the natural. The alcohol being a natural part of the brewing than like mixing, you know, tequila or vodka or whatever the heck else into it.
Yeah, I think there's probably something to be said for that. I mean, obviously your alcohol is alcohol on some level, but yeah. Everything's probably like synergistically working a little bit better in there since the alcohol is being brewed in.
Yeah. So what do you think of capitalism overall?
I think that, you know, in an idealistic world, you know, all the different systems that are out there in an idealistic world, they work on some level, you know, but
right.
we don't live in this perfect world, and people are always going to take advantage of the system. And so capitalism works really well, but people take advantage of the system just like any other system.
Right.
And without some type of regulation or oversight, you know, it's impossible for us. Like if we just let capitalism run wild with no oversight or regulation, then we would completely rip every resource out of the world.
Right.
Because at the heart of capitalism is producing more and more and making more and more money and GDP going up. And
right.
That would totally rape every resource that we have in the world, and we would be left with nothing. So, you know, there, conscious capitalism, if we do it right, I think is a really... can be really impactful and probably the best system that I could think of.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It gets such a bad name because I'm a Kundalini yogi. I practice Kundalini yoga, and and it's if you listen to the, you know, Guru Singh, he's like one of the head Kundalini people, you know, one of the original Kundalini people. You listen to his podcast, it's really interesting. He's got a couple of stories about capitalism, and one being the idea for Yogi Tea, which is like one of the biggest companies, you know, any tea companies anywhere. It came from someone, you know, one of the original Kundalini yogis' early morning sadhana meditation, and he just got this idea to start a tea company. Right. And Yogi Bhajan, the guy that brought Kundalini Yoga here, was like, well, yeah, you guys need to take this tea and get it into every single store in the world. And basically had them make like impossible declarations regarding this tea. And they just started brewing it in like wooden barrels and swinging it to tea shops around L.A. And there's another story about factory direct furniture sales, because Yogi Bhajan had a furniture, a mattress company, and they started. He got this idea via sadhana, Kundalini sadhana yoga meditations, to sell the mattresses directly from the factories to the consumers. So anytime you hear about factory direct furniture sales, it came from these meditations that these Kundalini yogis were having. And I found that to be fascinating, you know, because there's this whole like spiritual component to it, being led by something greater. And it was funny because soon thereafter I was meditating early morning. I got this idea to start an auto detailing business. And I'm like the least clean person you've ever met. And the universe was like, well, exactly. You know, this is how we're going to teach you to be more present in your life. Start doing it. Right. And that was the inspiration. But then there's the integrity. There's like, okay, well now I need to do these things and buy these things and figure this stuff out. But what I'm discovering is that capitalism is like this really cool way to, I don't want to say make money out of nowhere, but it's really it's an amazing way to deliver a fair product and to get fair pay and to have everybody be happy at the end of the day. I was wondering if you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, sure. First, I like to say, it's funny that you mentioned Kundalini. I love going to sadhana. I don't do it every morning, but there's a couple that hosts like a sadhana at their house every morning here in San Diego. I don't know if you've ever been to their...
I don't think I have, actually.
Morning practice is pretty awesome. Older couple. They also teach at one of the studios right near South Park or North Park. Anyhow, that's a powerful, you know, I think meditation in general is a powerful place to get inspiration as well.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think that totally. I mean, it's like, I think our whole existence, we've been, you know, it's like we used to live a sustenance existence where we were just, you know, my great grandfather lived on a farm, and there was like, he had 9 kids, 10 kids. His wife died at childbirth on the 10th one. Right. So he was living on a farm by himself with 8 kids. And it was like, the only thing they could do was just survive. You know, they were right. Like, that was their daily tasks, were surviving. And we've gotten to the place where we can specialize in things. And by specializing in things, we've allowed ourselves to do more spiritual endeavors. You know, we've allowed ourselves to have time for meditation and spiritual work and surfing, which is a super spiritual experience. And like, you didn't have time to go surfing back then. Like, are you kidding me? You're going to go learn how to surf for 6 months? Like, someone has to plow the field.
Right.
So I think that, yeah, getting fair pay for a fair product, but you know, we really have to dive into like, what is a fair product? You know,
right.
It's like, it's a fair product for the people that are getting it. It's fair for the people that are making it. And then it's fair for the planet, you know, that, and not really the planet, because the planet's going to live on after if we all screw it up, but like our existence on the planet as we know it, you know? And that to me is really impactful and can be really powerful.
And you've definitely spoke to it or alluded to it, but what do you think your responsibility is here?
My responsibility?
Yeah.
You mean on the planet in general?
Yeah, just to the planet, or, you know, as an entrepreneur, like as a successful entrepreneur, right, who's engaged in, you know, the capitalistic system, what is your responsibility?
Well, I think we have a responsibility to a lot of different people and things. You know, one is our employees. You know, when you hire someone, there's a responsibility there that, you know, you're their lifeline. You're their, the way that they're, you know, going to pay their bills and put food on the table. And so there's a responsibility to them to, you know, to continue to have this business be successful, and so that they don't, you know, you don't go bankrupt and they don't lose their job, as well as to give them a fun, fair, equitable working environment and equitable pay. There's a responsibility to consumers, I think, to, you know, they're buying the product, to be transparent. You know, at the end of the day, if you're transparent and you say, hey, this is everything that went into this, this is all the things that we did to make it, this is the impact that it had, and then people choose to buy it, then, you know, that's a fair exchange. There's never perfect. Like, nothing is truly sustainable or has zero impact on the planet. A lot of people are like, we have zero energy and they buy credits or whatever, but you know, it's all renewable, but there's still an impact somewhere. Like, there's no single no waste company on the planet. You know, your product has to get to people, and there's delivery vehicles and everything. So as long as you're transparent about what's in the product, I think that's fair for the consumer. But then there is also fair, you know, you can be really transparent with the consumer, but not fair to the planet. So I think there's a responsibility to be fair to the planet and to, as close to as possible, to like have an equitable give and take. You know, it's like, I give, you know, I'm taking all these resources. What am I giving back? Am I giving back money to nonprofits that are doing some good to the planet? Am I going and executing projects? Am I buying stuff from farms that are regenerative? Yvonne Chouinard, saw him talk recently, and he said that the 1% for the planet, the 1% is not charity. The 1% is our rent for the planet. It's just a minimum. It's like, it's one of your business line items. It's just your rent on the planet. You're not doing something charitable by giving 1% of your sales to nonprofits. You're actually just kind of doing the minimum.
Right. So are you guys engaged in giving back or in charitable, you know, contributions or taking on, you know, having that be an aspect of the business that you're doing?
It'd be pretty funny if I said no.
Yeah, right.
yeah, we totally are. We're members of 1% for the planet. So we give 1% of our gross sales.
Nice.
And we really like to get involved in the projects. You know, it's like, we don't want to just give 1%, have it evaporate into administrative costs. We help co-create a program here at Wildwillow Farm here in Chula Vista and Imperial Beach, actually, that's called Farm to Families. And we give money to support the program, which goes to getting CSA boxes to these families who are underserved, who don't have access to fresh produce. And then along with that comes education around nutrition and gardening and cooking education, so they can figure out how to cook these vegetables that they haven't seen a lot of. And at the end of the program, they get a garden built in their house. And then there's a reciprocal kind of, then they help lead and guide the future groups. So there's a reciprocal thing where they get to help teach the next groups and help mentor the next groups. And that's been really impactful. We've only done one group and we're on the second group right now over at the farm. It's going on. And now we're looking in other ways, like we're looking at what we can do with the sugar, supplier, and where else can we make an impact? Because as we grow exponentially, there's exponential dollars to and resources to go somewhere. And we want to make sure it does the most impact, that we can make.
Well, so what's your relationship to your own brilliance and all of this like?
It doesn't feel brilliant to me. I don't feel like I'm a mad scientist, like discovering, right, new equations for physics. And, I feel like I'm just taking one step after the other and, really paying attention to the signals, like the gut feeling in myself. Maybe that's the brilliance, is just being quiet and listening to the gut feeling. It just feels like I've gone down the path. And I was talking about this with someone the other day. It's like being willing to change, like being willing to have a hard conversation, quit a job, end a relationship, like being willing to say, what's happening right now in my life isn't right for me.
Right.
I'm going to make a shift. I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to start this thing that feels uncomfortable. I'm going to leave this relationship. I feel like a lot of people get stuck in these ruts, and then the longer they go in them, they're not happy. The deeper the rut goes, and then the harder it feels like it is to dig out. And it's hard to have that conversation to tell your boss you want to quit or to whatever. But oftentimes I feel like when people are just forthright, especially if they don't wait too long, that the people that they're forthright with, they're supportive of the change or agree, like, yeah, that would be great for you. Like, how can I support you? And so I think that's a part of it, is just every time I see like a crossroads that happened in my life, it was like, oh man, I remember I had to like have that conversation or quit or end that relationship or start this new thing that was scary. And that eventually led me to here.
Yeah. Yeah. It really just sounds like, don't overthink it. Take the next indicated step.
Yeah.
Like it's obvious the universe has been laying things in your path and you've just been going, oh, okay. All right. This is the next thing that there is for me to do. And just kind of following the breadcrumbs that are being dropped. And I think that a lot of people, unfortunately, they just can't see them, or their spirits aren't even necessarily ready to see them. You know what I mean?
But yeah, there's a lot of distractions. I think that people get caught up in distractions. There's social media, there's telephones, there's email, there's, there's TV. People watch a lot of TV. And not to say that all these things are bad. I'll watch a movie on my computer, or like an episode, every now and again, I try to stay away from the TV show series because I just get addicted to them. So I just have to like blackball them. I'll watch a movie here and there, and I still, I have a business. Like, we have social media. It's a necessary thing. But I try to have time away from those things so that I can listen to those things and have time completely disconnected from technology, whether it's meditating, surfing, doing acro yoga, hanging out with friends, eating food with people where I'm not looking at my phone or a computer or a TV.
Well, that's the one thing I love about surfing, man. There's really no way to get an electronic device into the ocean. I mean, you could if you really wanted to.
No, man. People do not have their Apple Watches out there.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sad. When I started seeing people checking their text messages while they were surfing, I was like, oh, man.
What happened? Take your wave, and I'm not going to feel bad about it.
Yeah.
So speaking of TV, were you I'm looking at your bio here again. Are you actually a stuntman as well? Is that true?
Well, I say stuntman because it's a little bit more relatable, but I'm actually an acrobat.
I gotcha.
So I do partner acrobatics.
Right.
Some of my friends that are in the acrobatics world are stuntmen,
right,
and women. But I teach acro yoga and partner acrobatics, and I put on an acro festival a couple times a year in a couple different places. And just big in that community is kind of a passion of mine.
Nice, man.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I want to start wrapping up today. Is there anything else that you would just like to say? Is there any nuggets of wisdom or inspiration you'd like to listen to anyone who may be listening to this interview?
Yeah, one is just, as cheesy as it sounds, as many times as people have heard it, it's really true to just make sure that you're passionate about what you're doing. At the end of the day, I think the harder question might be, what am I passionate about? Right. You know, I think a lot of people realize that they're not passionate about what they're doing, but they feel stuck and they're in a job that they don't like and they're making money, but they need to keep making money to pay rent. And
right.
Finding out their passion might be the hard part. But I think if you dive deep enough, you know, you can find the passion. I think everyone has things that they're passionate about. And maybe there's a first step of finding something that you're passionate about within your current company, you know, because there's probably a little bit of things that you enjoy and don't enjoy about your work. So if you're passionate about what you're doing for work, and then you're passionate about your relationships that you have outside of work, like your partner or your friends, and you enjoy both those things, then that's going to be a pretty meaningful and fun existence. But that's the first step, is like, if that's not happening, that's the bare minimum, then let's, you know, figure that out.
Yeah, cool, man. I really appreciate you you coming on and having this talk with me today. I have one last question that I like to wrap up with, and that is, what would you like to be acknowledged for?
That's a tough question. I don't know if I've figured out yet how to share this with people in a way that lands, but because often it can come out feeling preachy and whatnot, but I really like to share just the importance of connection with food and where it comes from. And you don't have to say that everyone has to eat organic and everything, and like we all have to buy 100% X or Y. But really just like I would like to share that connection with food with people and kind of give people that sense of connection with their food and where it comes from. And I would love to be acknowledged for having helped someone find that connection.
Yeah, man. I'm sorry. Go on.
Just even if it's one, you know, one person, five people. Not that a million people that I have to bring that to a million people. I'd love to bring that to a million people, but you know, just really, I'd love to be like, that would be a big win for me if someone acknowledged me for sharing that with them.
Yeah, man. Well, I really want to acknowledge you for, you're operating inside of a gigantic commitment, right? In which this relationship with food that you're helping people to nurture or discover or whatever is just it's kind of like a subcategory of this gigantic commitment that you have to sustainability and the planet and sustainability of the people who you come into contact with. And I really want to acknowledge you for this, for the enormous impact that you are creating on this planet, right? And the food and the aspect of food related to that is a huge part of all of it, right? And food is just, it's this thing that everybody has to do. You have absolutely no choice in the matter. You have to consume food. And you are definitely creating a large impact, and you're really creating a little footprint in the way that people relate to their experience of consumption. And I really appreciate that. And I want to acknowledge you for that. And I also want to acknowledge you, man. Like, you're just like this dude that's just like accepting your hero's journey, you know, like Obi-Wan comes to you and he's like, make this kombucha. And you're like, okay, I'm going to do it. Like, whatever gets in my way, it doesn't matter. I'm going to freaking do it, you know? And I'm really interested to see where you go from here. Right. So I just want to acknowledge you for who you bring on the planet, who you are for all the people you come into contact with, your commitment, and, you know, for being a surfer and all that other cool stuff too. So thanks a ton for coming on today. It's been really an honor.
Thanks so much, Dave.
You're super welcome. My pleasure. All right, guys, it's been another edition of The Talk, and we will be talking to you next time. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Before the ayahuasca, before the clear blue skies, and before the great awakening, there were demons disguised as angels in shiny foily packets containing China heroin. The cheapest vodka bottles, the filthy escapades, my morning hustle on the train. And the angels watching over me, the God that I could never see as I wandered alone through city streets. And the whores, the whores. Submission till I cast aside my demons, and that's when it came shining through dusty blinds in a dim lit room, and I saw the light. I saw the light. I saw the light. before the ayahuasca, before the clear blue skies, and before this great awakening. There were demons disguised as angels in shiny foily packets containing China heroin. The cheapest vodka bottles, the filthy escapades, my morning hustle on the train. And the angels watching over me, the God that I could never see as I wandered alone through city streets. And the whores, the whores, the whores were my friends. The hookers and the junkies and the other deviants. They beat me to submission till I cast aside my demons, and that's when it came shining through dusty blinds in a dim lit room. Of my ways, but may God bless you if you keep one by your face.